Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 49 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and Sean Orford. Hi, Sean.
Hello, Edward. How are you?
I'm very well, but how are you, more importantly, because you have run your 10K?
I am a stunning athlete.
I wouldn't go that far. You did okay, didn't you?
I did okay. The
Sefton 10K, wasn't it?
Yeah, Sefton Park 10K. Yeah, I got the way around, which was the first target. I had a bit of an injury the week before, which meant I was loaded with painkillers and Voltarol gel and stuff like that to go around. And I reckon I should have done it in an hour.
Yeah.
Conrad reckoned. But by the time we had to stop and sort my back out and start getting all that kind of stuff, it took an hour and 10 minutes. Which I'm okay with.
That's very impressive, Sean. You've done very well.
I'm still achy a bit, but I'm going to sign up for the Wirral Half Marathon at the end of the year. So
you're going to push on?
Yeah, I'm going to try and get there.
No resting, no relaxing?
I'm taking it easy this week. And next week, I'm not going to do any running at all because I'm on my... my detox is coming to a close, but I'm going to have my fluid week next week.
Uh-huh.
So at least Monday to Friday, I should just be on honey, water and lemon.
Wow.
Flushing the system through.
Yeah.
And then coming back up.
And then you're building back up.
Yeah.
Into the good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I have a bottle of wine in the cupboard that's waiting for me. It'll be vintage by the time I get to it.
Yeah. I know a thing or two about that. I had a far less active weekend than you. I had a stag do for a good pal of mine on the Sunday. We had a bank holiday Monday, so we went a bit crazy on the Sunday. So
where did you go for that?
Well, it was a day of fun. I had 24 hours of freedom. I was basically felt 18 again. We did some indoor go-karting in Warrington in the afternoon, which is a cracking bit of fun. I didn't win. I was supposed to. Everyone thought I would because I'm this semi-professional. I know what I'm doing. But I was rammed out in the final. Outrageous. I was pretty angry.
You should have gone outside and had the fisticuffs thing.
Well, I had words with my buddy, put me in the tyres.
the thing that's weird about that, how can you do indoor go-karting with all those fumes coming out the exhaust pipes?
Yeah.
You not all have brain damage when you come out.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that at the time, but a huge warehouse in Warrington. It's the biggest indoor karting circuit in the UK, maybe in Europe. Stunning. It's like a kilometre long. You go upstairs at one point and...
You go upstairs?
Well, up, not actually. Up a ramp.
It's a pretty clever go-kart.
It's on a few levels. It's an incredible track, actually. Quite a challenge, but I had good fun. I think I proved my worth. I did okay, really.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's a good laugh. Good laugh.
You're a star, though.
And then we're in Liverpool in the evening for some good old-fashioned fun in town, just like the old days.
So did you have a hangover on Monday?
Yeah, I wasn't in too good a way. I had one too many Jager bombs, and it was a good laugh, just like the old days. But yeah, Liverpool's a great city, man. So yeah. I used to go out twice a week.
Mm.
It's changed a fair bit, but it's a good vibe in that town, I must say.
Yeah, and it's amazing how it's developed.
Mm.
There's some amazing places. You know, over in the kind of like the art quarter bit, the amount of cafes, restaurants and bars that are inside warehouses.
Yeah.
They're really incredible when you go in there.
Mm.
We went in one in the winter and they had a log fire in there. The logs were like 3-4 feet long. And this thing, huge, great place, amazing.
Oh, there's some stunning little places hidden away. You just need a bit of money, hey, to enjoy all these things, which is what we're about to discuss.
Yeah, money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we do, I just want to say thank you to a kind reviewer on iTunes. I was going to try and pronounce the name, but I'm just going to spell it. I don't know how I'm supposed to spell this.
Coward. Go on.
Firovnrnj. So from Irovnrj. Based in the UK. On the 1st of May, they gave us a 5-star review. It's awesome.
Thank you.
And they listened to us in the car on their way to work. So they say, rush hour is a breeze whilst listening to your podcasts. I forget the cues and lunatic drivers, and I get engrossed in your light-hearted and educational chats. Just need to extend my drive to work by 10 minutes so I don't have to sit in the car and catch the end. I've got a little idea for you there, because our friend at goodpodcasts.com, who listens to podcasts, I think, all day, every day, he listens to his in double time, double speed.
Does that make your voice go higher?
I think it does, yeah.
I've got this idea. I'm going to listen to you and I'm doing this. We'll be speaking like that, right?
I guess it will be, yeah. I think, I'm sure the Apple podcast app has that in it, and I think the Stitcher one as well does, so...
I'm going to check that, I didn't know that.
Even just for a laugh, I would suggest. Listen to Sean and me in double time or 1.5 speed.
Get it over with quicker. Oh, that's it, done.
But thanks to Fruman Jov for the review. We really appreciate it, don't we, Sean?
We do. I'm fascinated now. Maybe we could record it in double time.
Maybe we should get talk like this.
So slowly.
Okay, right. We're talking about money this week. This is one that's come about. We have actually talked about money before. Back in episode 15, Money, Is It a Force for Good? So you can dive even deeper if you want and you haven't listened to that one. Go back into the archive and have a listen. But we had a regular listener, Mike, who's emailed in. And I'm just going to read their email just so you can all get up to speed with why we're talking about this. And Mike said, money is an issue which crops up occasionally and one which you and Sean discuss with great clarity. Well, thank you. For me personally, I find it a difficult subject. I imagine I'm not the only one. So easy it is for money to control us as opposed to controlling our money or us controlling our money. I often will get negative feelings associated with doing something that I really want to do. If, for example, it's costing a bit of money. It's not that I don't have much of it, but I have this target of having £500,000 in the bank before really committing to enjoy life without constantly trying to save for future income and security. And then just finally, I'm talking for my own personal self, but I hope that this is not an isolated view. We need answers like how to spend money, how to remove negative feelings when spending money, and how can we endure experiences we're financially committed to without just thinking of how much it's cost us. And what Sean said in the past about how if you did win the lottery or come across a load of money, you shouldn't change what you're doing or shouldn't change your path in life, really hit home. So thanks, Mike. So let's dive in, Sean.
I want to start off with the phrase that what you have to do is love people and use money and not the other way around. Because lots of people love money and use people in their bid to get their money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's important that we love people first and that money is a vehicle. Because that's the bit I want to start with, is that money's just energy.
Yeah.
That's what it is. We think about it in terms of these material lumps of stuff or bits of paper. Originally, money was gold coins and was silver coins and copper coins that were all barterable metals. You could use those to sell things on. But once you get into paper money, the whole thing becomes a nonsense because it's a confidence trick.
Yep.
Yeah, so the thing about on a British banknote, it says, I promise to pay the bearer in demand the sum of £5, £10, £20, whatever it is. If you went to the Bank of England and said, can I have my £10, please? They'd think you were bonkers, wouldn't they? They wouldn't, because you've got this token that says it's a £10 note, but on it, it says, I promise to pay the bearer on demand the sum of.
Yep.
Yeah, because it doesn't actually exist. There is the pounds aren't there. And any gold that was in the reserves was sold off by Gordon Brown, I believe, the Prime Minister of the time. So there isn't even any gold to back it up.
Back all that.
Yeah, so the whole thing's a confidence trick. And in that sense, it's just an energetic system. It's energy moving around.
Well, my current obsession, or one of my current obsessions, is Bitcoin and digital currency.
Yep.
And that's moving things on even one step further, and it's not, there's not even money. I mean, paper money, it's just little digital bits of code going around and shifting around the world, which is a mad concept, but it's kind of getting there, it's catching on.
But if you start off with barter systems where you have people dragging things around that they're going to swap for other things.
Yep.
If I've got a cow and you only want a leg, I can't just hack the leg off and give that to you for something and then trot on. It's like I've got to find some way of compensating myself for the fact that my cow now can't walk. And so like these tokens or coins or shells that we use as currency are things that compensate for that. So I can take my pile of shells, you can take your leg of my cow, and I can use my pile of shells to go and buy something else.
Yep.
Yeah,
like a holiday to Thailand or a ski trip to Austria.
Yeah, anything. You know, but but that whole thing that, like you're just saying, is like barter systems are active. That there's, I've got some links that we're going to chuck up. But there's one link that was in the Independent newspaper. They're talking about a corporate barter system where lots of big companies, and we're talking about billions of pounds every year, are bartering services, they're bartering materials, they're bartering all kinds of products and machinery outside of the tax system, outside of the money system, and it's worth like £5-6 billion a year in the UK. It's huge.
Well, I've got a fair amount of experience of little things like that. I'm not going to mention directly because the tax man might be listening.
But one of the things that's weird is that if you start bartering stuff around, that the tax man can have an interest in that because the bartering can be seen as what's known as payment in kind.
Yeah.
So if you're bartering things with other people, the tax man could have an interest in the value of that and expect you to pay tax on it in some way.
But not in kind, in cold hard cash.
Cash, yeah. you can take a leg of pork round to give to the tax man. It's a bit like lots of people over the years have been using chip fat to run their diesel engines. And you're supposed to pay the tax man so much per litre, duty of litre, on how much chip fat you get from the chip shop to run your car on. You're actually legally supposed to pay that.
Which
is all kind of crazy. But there are several barter systems around. So there's two that I've put links up for, apart from that, the article that's about the corporate one. Is one's called U Exchange, which is an interesting site to go and look at, talking about how you can do things outside of the money system. Mm-hmm. And the other one that I like is called Let's Link UK, which is really interesting because that's about setting up all kinds of systems where you can, in your area, you can start a particular group, where you can start a Let's Link group. So you've got a group of people working together and they may be working towards particular projects. Or it may be that it is more of a free-flowing system. But there's loads of information on the Let's Link site about how you can set up your own alternatives to money.
Yeah, when you were in your communities back in the day, that was the kind of thing going on as well, wasn't it?
Yeah,
the exchange of energy.
Well, we looked at it in terms of, we called it the person-hour system. In the sense that an hour of your energy was worth the same as an hour of my energy. If you're a brain surgeon and I'm a bog cleaner, it doesn't make any difference because it's the hour of energy that's important. If I focus my energy for an hour, it's worth an hour of your energy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what we're doing with it.
Yep.
So we had an equality of value between us. And that worked quite well.
Yep.
But the thing for me about money in the sense that we're looking at it, once you get out of the barter systems, all that money represents is energy. And one of the questions that always comes up is it good to have money? Is it bad to have money? All that kind of stuff. And we get it the wrong way round. We think that the money somehow makes us do something, and it's not that way round. If you're a negative person and you have money, or that energy of the money gives you the power to be more negative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're a happy, jolly person and you have lots of money, all the energy the money does is allow you to be happier and more jolly.
Yep. Yeah.
One of the problems is, and this is a problem that Mike might experience, is that if you hold your money and you keep your money back, which is holding energy back, yeah, it's not going to do anything. Yeah, there are some people that say, but if you invest your money wisely, you get the interest off the money.
Yeah.
And I can remember one guy in the Conservative Party saying that you're not rich until you can live off the interest on the interest of your money.
Blimey.
That's when you're rich.
Okay.
And for most people, that's all kind of fantasy land. Yeah. How many tokens do we need to accumulate around us to make us feel okay? You know, for Mike, it sounds like he's going for the 500,000.
Half a mil, yeah.
And then at that point, you'll feel, okay, I'm safe now, I'm secure.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, I know people who, if they've got a fiver, feel like they're in the land of the kings and they're having a good time. So at what point are you broke? Are you broke when you've got nothing? When you've got a fiver, a tenner, 20, 50, 100, 1,000, you know, a million? Mm-hmm. At what point do you feel broke? Because I've known people who have come to see me as clients who have been depressed because they were down to their last million.
Wow.
And they'd had, you know, they'd been lived in worlds where they had 7 or 8 million.
Yep.
So that they were in some relative deprivation, some relative poverty.
Yeah.
They were experiencing,
well, I mean,
were worried.
There are a good chunk of people in Britain that are considered in poverty. I think it's, you know, probably close to 1 million or something like that.
Yeah.
But our definition of poverty in Britain is very different to the definition, say, in maybe some African or Far Eastern countries, where it's basically I haven't had a drink for 3 days of water. Whereas in Britain, it's, you know, it's different, we'll say.
There are people that are on the street here.
Oh, yeah.
There are people that are in ridiculous, stupid, shouldn't be allowed levels of poverty.
Yeah, and I saw some of them on Sunday night, actually, in Liverpool.
Yeah.
You know, I don't carry cash around with me generally now anymore, so I couldn't really help them out, but I'll give them a smile and, wish them well. I won't look down my nose at them. That's an issue with money, actually, isn't it, now? Because we're talking about where you carry in your wallet to feel safe and secure.
Well, I think it's to do with having done a lot of travelling.
Yeah.
But for me, you have your keys. These days you have your phone. You need your wallet, which would have things like your cards in it. But you need your watch. Now, your watch, I don't know why it's a watch. It's not a wedge. It's a watch. Is the folding Mizuma that you put in your back pocket. And I just counted up in my pocket. I've got something like 135 quid, something like that, in my pocket. And I would carry around 100, 200 pounds in my pocket as a standard. But I've always done that forever.
Yep.
So it's been different amounts. But
You were 16, carrying a couple of quid around.
Yeah, it'd be my kind of fiver.
1800s, that's a lot of
money. A few groats. But the... to have what you need to make you feel okay. What is that? And one of the things that comes up when you work with people on money is when you say to people, how much do you want? People always say a million because it's a round sum.
Mm.
And when you actually get them to cut that down and look at what they would do with it, they don't need a million at all. Most people, like £100,000, £200,000, would see them in the lap of the gods. And most people need fairly modest kind of incomes to do what they want. You know, they want to have holidays to raise their kids, you know, to be able to go and have a drink and a meal when they want to, all that kind of stuff. And the amount of people that need big bucks are actually quite few.
Yeah. And we talked about, I know, definitely in the previous money podcast about how, well, we'll talk about now the money blueprint people have, and that people will always return to that level of comfort.
There's
plenty of stories about people that have won the lottery. That
Harv Eker is the money blueprint guy. He's my resource, so I'll come back to him at the end. But one of the things is that inside your head you've got a money blueprint, and the money blueprint will be telling you how much money you need to earn per year. And that will depend maybe on the way you've been brought up, the kind of expectations you have, but whether you're the kind of person who's happy with 10,000 or 20,000 or 30, or does it have to be 50, 100? 250,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you need to make you feel right? Yeah, and again, it's a lot less than people usually go for.
Yeah,
you know, people have this fantasy figures in their heads, and one of the problems with creating fantasy figures in your heads is it becomes unachievable for lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
So they start with that depressive symptom, or you can spend your life trying to create this safety blanket, this wadge that is in your back pocket or under the mattress or in the bank or wherever it is, that makes you feel like, okay, now I can get on with my life. And that can be the problem of missing the journey because you're focused on the goal.
Well, it sounds like our pal Mike might be in that kind of...
I hope that Mike is enjoying creating his wadge, because that's the trick, isn't it? If you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, these things are a bit like they're kind of amusing. The idea of creating £1 million under the mattress has a kind of a humour about it for me, and I could do that for a laugh. But why would I want £1 million under the mattress? You know, would it be that I'm then worrying about that £1 million, or, you know, am I needing to do something? What's it doing for me? What is it creating security for me? Why is it creating security for me?
Yep.
You know, what happens if my security is tied up in my million under the mattress and the currency collapses because people suddenly realise that there's nothing backing up this, I will pay the bearer on demand the sum of £10. So, like, suddenly all these bits of paper under my bed are just firelighters.
Yep.
And they're useless. What happens to me then? You know, where's my security then?
Mm.
You know, perhaps there are other things to have security and other than money that might actually be a bit more useful.
Yeah.
You know, it could be bricks and mortar, could be family.
Have you seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
No, not yet.
That's a fun movie, that.
Is it a fun movie?
Yeah. Pretty close to the bone sometimes and pretty risque, but good fun. And, the main guy in that, played by Leo DiCaprio, just loved the pursuit of money, and you know, did some pretty scurrilous things to get it, to be fair. But you, it's a fun movie, like, you got to watch it. Don't watch it with your parents if you're certainly younger, because it's kind of, you'd be just embarrassed because it's pretty risque. But yeah, the fun of chasing that, the big bucks, is comes out.
I can get the idea of fun, and that, and it's the fun of, and in that sense, the money is immaterial, because it, the fun is whatever you're going to do, whether you're trying to create the Empire State Building or invent an aeroplane, whatever you're doing, that's the fun.
Yeah.
And it, that's enjoying the journey. But when you get to the other point of it, you know, what does it mean? It, if money is energy, money is power, it gives you the ability to do something.
Yep.
So it's true that if we got enough dosh and you and I said, I know, let's jump the Virgin thing that goes up into space, and let's go and go and have a look at the Earth from the other angle.
Yep.
And we wanted to do that. If we had the dosh to do that and we wanted to do it, then that would be okay, wouldn't it? Because that would be like going and getting a taxi or getting a bus or a plane or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it depends on what level you're working at. Yeah. How many people would actually want to do that, though?
Mm.
Yeah. And if the money is really a magnifying glass, is just allowing you to be more of what you already are, which was my point in the previous podcast, which was about if you having money, like winning the lotto and suddenly having this big input of money, changes your life substantially from what you're actually doing now, then you're doing the wrong thing with your life now.
Yep.
That's the bit that you haven't faced up to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Equally alongside that are all the stories of the people that did win the lotto, did have the money, didn't have a clue what they wanted to do, but had all this power, and just wrecked their lives, wrecked their bodies, wrecked their relationships, their families, everything.
Yep.
Yeah, because suddenly they've got this wild energy that they can use.
Mm.
Which, if you go back to the idea of love people and use money, not the other way round, then you're going to get the balance about right.
So if you had, if you won the lottery, would your life change much?
Yeah, I'd go and live in Honolulu, wouldn't I? No, of course.
You'd be off by Lake Como in Italy, writing.
What I'd probably do is, I would change the accent of what I do. I'd never stop seeing people. I would do that till the day I die, because that's to me is the sense of life. I guess what it would enable me to do is to see a lot of people for nothing that need to be seen. That would be good.
Yeah.
So I could expand my work that way, and I would have the opportunity to write more. I do enjoy writing, and you're right, I would have somewhere round about Lake Garda, probably. It could be Lake Como, it would depend. I'd have a nose around.
Yeah.
Somewhere where I could be there maybe half the year writing and seeing people could kind of drop by. And
I'd swing by. So,
yeah, that'd be good.
Make sure it's a 2-3-bed apartment or house. Yeah.
it'd be a big manor. No, I don't know what it would be, but it would be something. I mean, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? I used to have a house that had 2 staircases, 8 bedrooms, an acre of grass, and it was a pain in the backside. It was this great kind of status symbol that just ate money and time and energy. And I mean, cutting an acre of grass, and you have to do that every week in the growing season, is a pain in the backside.
Yeah, yeah. I've been talking about that recently, because we're in this, you know, pretty cool little house, tucked away in the corner of Bevington on the Wirral here. But we kind of, when we moved here, we kind of assumed that we would have another house when our family grew, as it is doing now, as it's about to. But in recent weeks, we've kind of been discussing it, and it's like, well, we could live here forever easy. It's a cool little place. It's big enough. What do we really need a bigger place for?
Yeah.
It's near to shops, because we drive, you know, to other parts of the world and some really big properties, you know, and tucked away in kind of more rural areas. But you're like, okay, but you can't just nip down the shop for a pint of milk, and you can't have a chat with your neighbours, which we love doing, man. Our neighbours are so cool.
Yeah.
So why would we really be doing it?
Yeah.
You know?
What the big house taught me was that you can actually only sleep in one bedroom at a time, use one bathroom at a time, use one lounge at a time. It doesn't matter whether you've got, you know, 4, 6, 8 reception rooms. You actually only use one at a time. You know, you might use a conservatory. Yeah, and if you've got a bigger family, it's good to have a few rooms, because then, you know, people can still spread out and be themselves.
Yep.
But essentially, the amount of space that we need is quite small.
Mm.
We don't need these huge, great rambling places.
No.
You know, and how much of that is tied up in ego and I, me, my, must have, and look at me and aren't I lovely?
Yeah.
As opposed to, am I actually fulfilled? And you said about, you watching people and Aston Martins driving around the other side of the Wirral here, because we've got the rich side and the poor side, haven't we?
Split by the M53. Yeah.
So on the rich side, where you get the big cars. And it's interesting, it's like watching the big cars, watching the Maseratis and the Bentleys and all that kind of stuff going by. And it's like, spot the happy face.
Mm.
Yeah. Because, as you said, if you were driving an Aston Martin, weren't you smiling and having a good time?
You'd grin on your face the whole time. Yeah.
So, and in a sense, that kind of proves the point, doesn't it? Is that because you have the money, all the money does is amplify who you are. And if you're a miserable sod, then you're just even more of a miserable sod with money. So the trick is creating happiness. You know, maybe if the money follows the happiness, you can do good things with it and you can be a really happy person. One of the things that I wondered, we had a relative, Uncle Charles, who died recently, and we buried him last week. And he was demented, right?
Yeah.
But he was happy demented. And I've often wondered this. It's like, if people are fundamentally happy, does that mean that when they start to dement, they have a happy turn of mind, whereas people that are kind of nasty demented, is that the fundamental self?
Wow.
Yeah? And it's the same with booze. I've known people who are happy drunks who sit there chuckling away, piddle off their face. And there are people that are miserable drunks. And is it the energy that we put into our system, the way we change, just allows us to express who we are? Mm-hmm. And money's just energy.
Yep.
You know, we're obsessed about it. We're obsessed about the things that we get with it. You know, how many handbags can you have? How many pairs of shoes can you have? How many dresses can you have? How many suits can you have? All that kind of stuff. And how many do you actually wear or need to wear?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I'd quite happily wear the same outfit pretty much every day, depending on the weather and what have you. Maybe have four outfits, you know, and a nice suit. Look, I don't go shopping very much at all. And my wife's on her own when she does, generally, because I don't find it much fun. But hey ho. But just getting back to Mike's questions, or one which I want to discuss a bit more is, he's having trouble enjoying some of the things he's doing that he's spent a lot of money on. Maybe partly because he feels like, oh, I could have spent that money elsewhere. But
if the motivation is towards developing this safety blanket, yeah. Anything that you spend before you've completed your safety blanket must feel like you've got a moth eating holes in the blanket.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that you keep trying to stitch it up again, you know, and you're feeling depressed because you're spending the money because you're not saving it to create this feeling of safety or security. The idea then for me would be, once you have got your $500,000, okay, you're going to be protective of it, aren't you? You're going to because that's your safety blanket now.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean that you can then put that on one side? So now what you earn, you can enjoy, or would you always be thinking, well, it's inflation and that $500,000 is not worth what it was? So does that mean I need to keep? And it can become this life task, where we're tending this farm, this growing money, but we never actually harvest it. You know, when do we harvest it? You know,
and there's all sorts of bits of advice you'll get from from different people on what to do with that $500,000, because it's not much good under a mattress, really. But like, yeah, my pal Rob at RMP Property, the property podcast, you know, he'll tell you, chuck it into property, you know, get some buy-to-lets on the go, get it. That's, to be fair, it works. Like, then you'll get plenty of other people saying, put it in Bitcoin. Don't put it in Bitcoin, Mike, please. But a little bit, maybe, like 1%.
Yeah.
There's lots of bits of advice going around, aren't there? And there's the advice that you give, Sean. But you don't give financial advice.
No. My financial advice is, give it to me. I'll look after it for you. I think I said this before now, but I had a client who, a few years ago, who won $1.4 million, and quite a depressive person. And when the one win came through, they said to me, oh no, I've got to worry about this now too. You know, I've won this bloody money. Oh my God. And they were so depressed about the fact that they'd won the money, which made me laugh outrageously. I did offer to look after it for them.
That's good of you.
But it was refused. I'll worry about it for you. Don't worry.
But how are they doing now?
It's enabled them to develop their miserable attitudes, really. I mean, they've changed in some ways, but the thing is this is the whole point, is that the money is meaningless without the heart behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the money is a burden. The money is a problem. You know, it's certainly true that the more stuff you accumulate, the more you have to look after, mm-hmm. the more you've got to lock up, the more you've got to insure, the more security conscious you've got to be, the more you've got to protect it from other people that want to have it because you've got it.
Insurance, man. Yeah, no, I'm going through that stuff at the moment because my business is doing pretty well. It's like in shareholder agreements are on the cards now, and certain types of insurance is very grown up stuff.
Yeah,
but yeah, these are the responsibilities that come, hey.
Yeah, but the more that you accumulate, the more it gets like that.
Yeah.
The thing about someone like Murdoch, who has to own every news media outlet in the world, you know, how many do you need? Is it that he's got some kind of obsessive compulsive disorder, he's trying to accumulate them all? Mm. Or is it that he's some kind of power-crazed loony? Or is it that he's so insecure as a person that he has to have all this stuff to make him feel
okay? Yeah, I'd love to know for sure. He's quite an interesting guy. I follow him on Twitter. Murdoch, I think he went on there just as a bit of a PR exercise when all the news of the world stuff was kicking off. It's been quite interesting following him on there because he gets a lot of abuse, obviously, but he says some interesting things as well. So look him up. But yeah, interesting characters, these big media moguls, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I wonder where they fit in the happiness stakes.
Yeah.
Someone who always comes over as being a very benevolent and happy man is Branson.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know what he's actually like, never met the guy, but he always has a very positive demeanour about him. He looks like he's enjoying the experience of being alive.
Yeah, I follow him on online as well, and he's got an Instagram account, which is, I'm sure, run by someone else, some PR team. But it's always just him, like, surfing and just swimming off Necker Island, his retreat, isn't it? And I think he's a great role model.
Yeah, yeah, for all kinds of reasons. I mean, dyslexia and everything, isn't it? Yeah. It's like he's overcome stuff to do with it.
Yeah, his story's incredible. And he's one of those guys, you could tell just from the age of 12, 13, 14, he was going to just be huge. Yeah, have a look. Get onto his book as well. That's another little resource we should mention, hey?
Yep.
We're past the 30-minute mark, which means that our reviewer
is just arriving at
sitting
work.
In his or her car, just kind of waiting, saying, come on, guys, come on.
Get this over with.
He's going to be in trouble with his boss soon. We don't want that because that's his financial supply gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Or her.
Yeah, unless they've wound it up and they listen to it in double time. They may not be at work yet.
But anything in summary, Sean, or do you want
to... I just want to stick with the idea that forget about money as stuff and just think about it as energy. All that money does is allow you to do things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you keep too much of it in the cupboard, all you're doing is taking energy out of the system. Yeah, and recessions and depressions are about when the energy stops flowing around the system.
And if you're having negative feelings when you're spending money, whether it be on your holiday to Thailand or on a bottle of wine, is that a sign that you're doing something wrong, or is it just something?
Well, from my point of view, that's a sign where you need to go and do a bit of therapy, because mm-hmm. there's some relationship between the ability to live and allow your energy to flow and the fear of it flowing. And I can understand that if the security blueprint in your head is that you have to have a certain amount of money and that you're not going to feel that you're secure and safe until you've got that.
Yep.
Yeah. Then yeah, anything that you do to take away from that security is going to be affecting you. Mm-hmm. I go back to some of the monks that I knew who literally had a change of clothes, bedroll, a couple of books, food bowl, basic simplicities. And maybe a little amount of money, and that was it. And they never suffered from insecurity. They just off they'd trot and off they'd go. And in that belief that was borne out by their lives, that there was plenty out there, plenty to share, and people would share it with them. And they would travel all over the place.
And yeah,
Yeah.
I admire those guys. There are quite a lot of bloggers that travel and tell their story as they're travelling, but they travel with very, very little. But
yeah.
It's a bit of technology so they can tell the story, but, you know, they have T-shirts that they can wash in the evening and dry. It'll be dry by the morning, and loads of bits of kit that are super lightweight. So I'm slightly envious of those guys and girls that do all that stuff. So I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I'll try and put some links in the show notes.
There is a crazy book about two guys that start off in Penzance, which is the furthest south in England you can go.
Mm-hmm.
And their aim is to get to Scotland. I think it's Glasgow or Edinburgh. All they've got on is their underpants, and that's it. That's it. And they start from Penzance,
wow,
and from Land's End, the very end point, and start walking. and it's the story of how people gave them things, supported them, looked after them, gave them food on that journey.
Wow.
From one to the other. I'll put a link in for that. That's a cool.
That's
story.
Cool, man. All right. Yeah. Should we go into our resource of the week then?
Yeah, well, my resource is Harv Eker's Millionaire Mind.
Yep.
And the bit that's good about that is that he works a lot on your emotional attitude to money before you start worrying about creating money. So, and his thing is about you've got to get that money blueprint in your head right before you start doing the money stuff. Mm. And people that go wrong are the ones that get the blueprint wrong.
Yeah.
And they tend to make it and lose it and make it like yo-yo dieting, that kind of stuff. So if you get the blueprint right, and he's good at that, and he's good, and also he does make me laugh when, especially the audio version of the book, which is good, Millionaire Mind.
Yeah, no, Harv Eker is cool, man. He's on YouTube. There's plenty of motivational stuff. And my resource is an interview with a chap on London Real, which is a video podcast, which I'm kind of hooked on, really. And he's called Dan Pena. I think he said he just turned 70, or he's around that mark. Oldest chap, but super successful businessman, turned business coach, real high energy guy. You'll either love him or hate him, but he's mentored some super duper, I've gone on to become some super duper wealthy and successful inverted commas people.
Yeah,
he does it from his castle in Scotland that he's got. He's an American guy, but really interesting character. So I will put that it's like an hour and a half chat with this guy. He's just full of energy, man.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds good. Yeah.
So that's cool.
Great.
Righto. All done.
Yeah.
Next week we're talking about kindness.
Yeah.
And how important it is to be kind.
Yeah. And does kindness and wealth go together?
It's a kind of currency, kindness, I think.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Just be good.
Does it have more value than money? There's all kinds of things in that.
Interesting. Yeah, cool. It was kicked off by a YouTube video I saw, which is like a little animated thing with someone's commencement speech kind of dubbed over. I'll put that in the show notes so you can do a bit of homework and watch it before next week's show, chapettes. But yeah, in the meantime, go to the website liveinthepresent.co.uk for all of the show notes and links to things we've discussed. If you can leave us an iTunes review, as our pal with the impronounceable username did, we'll read it out because we love reading them. We love getting a bit of feedback, good or bad, let us know. And follow us on Twitter and Facebook, all that stuff. Sean?
Yeah. I should go and earn some money.
Let's get to it. Have a good week.
Okay, you take care.
See you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.